Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
To our new listeners, welcome. To our old listeners, welcome back. Another episode of Magical Education awaits you, but first, we would like to say a few words.
Nitwit, blubber, oddment, tweak. Podcast 9¾, topic of the week is House Identity, Ravenclaw.
Hello, listeners. I'm Rhea.
And I'm Gem.
And I'm Josh. You didn't introduce me.
Oh, right.
Didn't segue into that one, but that's cool. I'm a returning guest. I'm just going to do this myself. I'm a returning guest back in the flesh, the audio flesh, if you will. There you go.
Big Ravenclaw energy right here. Perfect for our episode.
I just wanted to flex that on you. Hello.
I love it. I love it when we have actual podcasters join us on the show and do it for us.
But anyway, yes, listeners, we do have a special guest today on the show, Joshy Boy, and he has been a returning guest. If you've listened to one of our previous episodes, Fantastic Beasts and Can We, You Know, Fuck Them, that was Josh on there talking about beast fucking with us. It was a fun time.
Yeah. Well,
we're so glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Yeah. And on this important episode, because neither Rhea nor I are Ravenclaws, and so considering for this entire episode we're going to be talking about the Nerd House, we thought we'd invite an advocate for Ravenclaw, and an actual Ravenclaw themselves, to talk about it with us.
Yes.
Yes.
The chosen one for chosen house.
Yeah. Listeners also might notice that I sound a bit odd because I'm quite sick. Josh is also maybe a little bit sick.
I don't sound odd to you. I just sound like the same, I guess, because there's no context or frame of reference for me. So.
Yeah, but bear with us.
And I sound great because I am great.
Yes, absolutely.
The best of all of us.
I'm excited for this sort of mini-series that we're going to be doing about the four houses. And I guess we're starting with Ravenclaw. Let's start there.
Start with the best.
Didn't you do a Twitter poll and the fans decided they wanted Ravenclaw?
The people chose this house, I guess. So let's go. I sound
now,
so
say it again with less disgust.
Let's talk about the smarties. So I've written down some house traits. The most dominant ones that we hear about all the time are kind of all synonymous with one concept, but I'm going to read them out anyway. They are wit, learning, wisdom, intelligence, creativity, individuality, and originality. So there's kind of two concepts there, but we get the idea.
Yeah, it's very much a blanket statement about this type of caricature of humans.
Yeah. Oh, they also, sorry, I forgot to mention, acceptance is one of the big ones as well. And then some off branches of those dominant traits is curiosity, hardworking, diligent, logical, rational, eccentric, competitive, and they value honesty.
Aren't hardworking and diligent Hufflepuff traits? Why are they also Ravenclaw traits?
Because no person is just one thing.
That's not fair. Never the twain shall meet. No blending of the houses.
Divergence.
Oh, God. Erect walls between the houses.
Did you read the books, Rhea? It's all about house unity, except for Slytherins. They can get fucked and stay in the dungeons, I guess.
Oh, I thought you were asking me if I'd read the Divergent books.
No.
Segue into
only the first one's worthwhile.
My new podcast, Divergent Talk.
Yeah,
I should come up with a better name for it.
No, yeah. That's it. That's what you're sticking
that's
with.
It. Divergent Talk.
Divergent.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, those house traits. What do we think about them?
Good. I like them.
There's nothing problematic about these traits.
There's nothing problematic about them, but like I mentioned before, they're very much basic. Like,
yeah, I think
yeah.
There's almost like we're the mystery house. Like, there's nothing explored There's nothing explored in terms of the main seven books with us besides Rowena, Ravenclaw, and a diadem. And, like, you get to see the common room in the 10th book, but there's really nothing. You have, Ginny dates these few Ravenclaw boys. There's Cho Chang, there's Luna, there's Trelawney, there's, like, and Flitwick. There's, like, some characters that you'd be like, oh, that's a good frame of reference to what Ravenclaws are. But there's nothing deep about it. Harry doesn't give a shit.
So what you're saying is Harry is useless.
Harry and the Gryffindors are just the dumb fucking jocks.
And you're the house of the art hoes and, like, the nerds. That's the vibe.
Yeah, we are art hoes and we are tranquil, I guess, like, all blue. Mm. And, like, one of the traits is, like, symbolizing blue. It's like air. Air is a big deal with our house.
Like, yeah, it's described because I just read, like, the house. Yeah, the books recently, and, like,
flight.
When in the seventh book, as soon as Harry walks into the common room, he says it's, like, so airy, and that's the first thing that he thinks about it.
God, Harry's great. I love his observation skills.
To be fair, too, like, I always thought of water as well.
No, that's Slytherin. You can't take that.
No, I'm not taking it away from you, from your slammy dungeons. I'm just mentioning that...
We have the wet hole house. That's us.
I'm just mentioning...
We claim the swamp.
The swamp is ours. Yeah,
Lake girls over here.
I'm just mentioning my thoughts. I mean, like, I always imagined... Same sort of concept, though. You think about space and think about deep underwater. It's sort of like the same... The characteristics, sort of floating freedom. So, yeah.
All right, I'll take it.
I'm not trying to steal it. I'm just mentioning.
Going back to what you said, like, at the very beginning, where I said, what do you think of these traits? And you said they're kind of basic. That's sort of the big impression that I've had for a long time with Ravenclaw, which is so unfair. It's so unfair. Like, they are really overlooked which is weird, because I think the majority of the fan base in terms of Harry Potter are Ravenclaws. And I guess a little part of me has always thought that's kind of basic, because if you read Harry Potter, if you enjoy Harry Potter, you're probably a smart person. So my instant thought is, okay, what's your other characteristic? which is really bad.
You heard it here first, folks. Gem says all the Harry Potter fans are nerds and basic.
Not all of them, the majority. And I've changed my mind. That used to be my preconception, but now I've come to realise there's more to Ravenclaw than meets the eye, and they're the least problematic house. The only slightly problematic person that they had was, like, Lockhart, and he's just a laugh. So,
yeah,
like,
we're like Autobots. Mm. Modern
and Quirrell.
I mean, Quirrell didn't choose what happened to him. Like,
yeah,
really.
But I'd still say he was a problematic person.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he was pretty.
He was, like, the secondary villain of the first book.
Yeah. Wait, who was the first villain? Oh, Voldemort, sorry.
Voldemort.
I think
it was Hagrid.
Plot twist.
It was
always Voldemort.
Yeah.
Neville Longbottom.
It's always the one you least suspect.
Yeah.
Okay, so I also wrote down some stuff about the house symbolism. We were kind of touching on this.
Mm.
So obviously you got the eagle, even though it's Ravenclaw, but whatever. So the eagle is representative of...
Yeah, why is it an eagle and not a raven? Can we talk about that?
Okay. I think it's because of what the eagle symbolizes. And the fact that it's Ravenclaw.
Smart.
Sounds better than Eagle Claw. I don't know.
I was thinking, because, like, Odin has two ravens that he sends out for deeds and missions. Like, I was, like, thinking,
memory and thought.
Like, Norse mythology and stuff as well, but no, they, like, sort of went the Christian route, and they just inserted the eagle. And I was like, there's so much potential there.
Well, even though all, like, it's all witchcraft, is very much the Christian route with these books. Just JK's past.
Yeah.
That's another episode we're going to have to do at some point.
Yeah. It's not a problem, because there's lots to look at in like, religious symbolism. Like, for eagles, there are a connection in Native American cultures as well as in many different, like, Christianity and Islam. They pop up all the time. They're seen as man's connection to the divine, because it flies higher than any other bird. They're like the king of the birds. And it's symbolic of honesty, truthful principles, as you said. You can summon the eagle when you're about to embark on a challenge, massive life change, or a creative endeavor. So it's got that creativity link to it as well. And eagles are seen as visionaries, those who are seeking and willing to push limits of self-discovery and personal freedom. So I really like that. They can be seen as aloof or retreat to the skies, but people will naturally gravitate towards them.
Oh, I feel that.
Yeah.
I embody that.
I like that a lot. And
I'm like, don't look at me. Don't talk to me. I'm going to retreat into my own den. But I also like company at the same time.
Yeah.
That's weird.
People always look to them for guidance, like in Brother Bear. Like, they're always seen as, like, because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sitka. Because the Eagle of Guidance, what did that mean? I love Brother Bear. So they're always seen as, like, being inspiring. They're a symbol of freedom that's more been adapted by the US, though. And they're, like, visionaries because they are the highest flyers and the king of the birds. So seeing things from their point of view must be, like, a true form of inspiration and understanding and leadership. So that's sort of the imagery associated with eagles.
All of that really ties into Ravenclaw House. I can see why they went with eagle instead of raven now.
Yeah. And also I think on a more of aesthetic level, because eagles are brown and they could adapt that to bronze so that the colours are blue and bronze and not have the black of raven, because then that would be sort of going on to Hufflepuff turf where it's like black and yellow. But even though the movies didn't fucking do that, so whatever.
I like to imagine all the four original founders are like doing their own drawings for their own concept of the house, and they keep like trying to pitch it to each other, and they're like, no, again, draw it again.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, come on.
Guys, I have a pet badger. You can't have a black animal. Black and white is mine.
It's my colours.
Rowena Ravenclaw is like drawing a fucking raven. She's like, God damn it. She like calls it in brown. There, it's an eagle. Get fucked.
You can't have a griffin, okay? We're all choosing non-magical animals. You guys suck. That's pretty much how I imagine them talking to each other.
Yeah. And then Wit Beyond Measure is Man's Greatest Treasure is, of course, Rowena Ravenclaw's kind of motto. Is it the motto of Ravenclaw House? Or just because the other houses don't seem to have mottos, do they? Or
I feel like...
I would think no, because as you just said, the other houses don't have mottos. I think it's just something that she wrote on her
like
crown.
If any house would have a motto, it would be
Ravenclaw. Then that bitch.
Maybe Ravenclaw secretly had a motto and the other houses never got the chance because she didn't tell
her. They left her part blank on the submission form. I also looked at the colour symbolism. So blue is the symbol, the symbolic colour of depth and stability, trust, loyalty, wisdom, intelligence, faith, the heavens, cleanliness, femininity, and calmness. But like I say femininity, but blue is also associated with masculinity now. But in my mind, I've always gone to femininity because of like historically. I mean, colours don't have genders, but like I've always associated blue with women because of the moon and the ocean, and that's always associated with female imagery.
More associated with just calming.
Yeah.
Like, it's a calming colour. Like, it is a blue suit.
Yeah. And feminine traits are seen to be calming as well, so that's what my mind's always jumped to as well. I don't know, I've always got this vibe that, like, of the houses, Ravenclaw seems to be the most feminine, but that just might be my interpretation. I don't know.
It's, I think we mentioned before, it's almost like there's a Grecian vibe as we get from it, like the Grecian standard of like beauty and architecture and like surrounding yourself and diving deep into like the arts and culture.
Yeah, I definitely
and like communication.
Vibe. Yeah. For bronze, they symbolize the feathers of the eagle. There wasn't much symbolism around bronze as a metal, but what I thought of was mirrors, how before glass became like a flat thing that we used on surfaces, we used bronze as mirrors.
I thought my own, like myself, that it would always convey to me like ancient artifacts, the ability to explore.
Like, like, statues and like stuff like that.
And new discoveries.
But it also represents third place, so.
Yeah, you mentioned this before.
I like that interpretation.
Of course you booked you. There's nothing wrong with third place. You turn it the other way around there to win off. Can't do it with silver, can you?
You turn it the other way around.
I love that.
Wrong backwards.
Yeah, I mean, silver and silver, and silver's just the first to lose. So,
silver's the only one that truly loses.
Honestly, yeah. And then all the symbolism around air. So the element associated with Ravenclaw is air. And that's all about, like, breath, life, communication, divinity, again. Always this, like, correlation with the divine.
Avatar.
freedom. Teaching, divination, mind, wisdom, spirits, and the soul. So very otherworldly is what air is always associated with.
Yeah.
And definitely not stagnant like Earth. It's constantly moving. So it gives me the idea that like air is always adapting and moving and changing shape. And that's that makes me think of like how intelligence and creativity works.
It's like open-mindedness.
Open-mindedness,
adapting to your nature.
So that's some symbolic stuff. Some of the questions I had written down, I don't know if you got answers to these, Rhea. My first one is, how can you recognize a Ravenclaw? What did you say?
Pop quiz.
Glasses, because they're a nerd.
You wear glasses.
Yeah, I know. What of it?
I don't wear glasses. What's the point here?
I don't know. How do you recognize any house? How do you look at someone and know their personality traits?
I'm not necessarily saying about physical characteristics, but like more about the kind of person that they are. Like people that you know in real life. Like we know Ravenclaws in real life. Like our dad is one of them, definitely.
Yeah.
Controversial opinion, but I'm saying it.
Why do you think he gets along with me so well? He's like, oh, come here.
Play game. Don't- like another son.
I am.
I want to play this game with Josh. So yeah, Rhea, besides physical characteristics, what sort of things would you pick up and be like, this person's a Ravenclaw, just from their behavior and stuff like that?
Well, I keep going back to Luna Lovegood's radish earrings.
Yes.
Which just sounds insane. But because like creativity and originality are Ravenclaw traits, I think people who you look at them and you're like, that's a person who, like, is really creative and really artistic and interesting, like, in the way that they dress and present themselves.
Yeah.
Like, I was just at university. Like, you'd see girls walking around on campus with, like, cool scarves and earrings that they'd made themselves out of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you guys are cool. And definitely Ravenclaw.
People who have, like, Etsy shops, I definitely get that vibe.
Yeah.
Like...
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. People who run their own Etsy shops are all Ravenclaws.
I definitely, that was one of my, like, my dot points, actually. I wrote down oddballs or creative types, fashion and passions. And fashion I wrote down explicitly because I get this idea that Ravenclaws are definitely the type of people who like to express their personality through clothing, whether it be by just choosing, like, vibrant colours or patterns or creating, like, real personalised looks and ideas for themselves. Because I think they're just, like, they like to... Not necessarily all Ravenclaws, but I think that's definitely something that you'd see a lot.
I like to look nice.
Yeah, well, you do that all the time.
I know.
I like
to look nice.
You like your colours. Other things I had written down was usually good academics, but not always. This isn't a requirement. I had down usually good workers, even if they don't care about what they're doing. And I wrote this down not necessarily because I think being hardworking is a Ravenclaw trait, but because if Ravenclaws are good academics... And they belong to a Western school system which rewards good work with, like, literal rewards or prizes. And then that sort of sets up your mind and your behavior to be like, if I work hard and do good, I'll be rewarded and praised for it. So, like, I think that's just
it's just a capitalist punishment.
It's a capitalist punishment. But I think if you'll find that if, like, you're working in a job where, like, another person that doesn't necessarily like their job, but they still do good work, not necessarily hard work or long work, but good work, they're probably a Ravenclaw because they're accustomed to that. Yeah.
Well, I think the thing is, because we've said, like, the Ravenclaw traits are, you know, their intelligence, their creativity, originality, individuality, those are all things that school tries to crush out of you. So just because you're a Ravenclaw doesn't mean you're necessarily, like, a great student and very academically inclined. Like you mentioned, our dad's a total Ravenclaw. Our dad is, like, one of the nerdiest people I know, which is saying something because I host a Harry Potter podcast. Like, I'm pretty nerdy and most of my friends are. Tomorrow I'm going to play D&D with my friends that I only know through D&D. And Dad, like, he never went to university. He's not, like, a really academic person.
Yeah.
That touches on the biggest cliche Ravenclaw is, like, it's all about academia. Like,
yeah, no,
like,
it's definitely not.
That's why they're always trying to sort Hermione into it, and it's like,
Hermione's not a Ravenclaw.
She does not fit.
She is not at
all.
She
is too narrow-minded.
She's too narrow-minded. She's so stubborn. She's so angry. Yeah. She's not Ravenclaw.
No.
Don't come at me. I dare you
to always think she's right. She will not yield.
Get out of my house, Miss Granger.
Yeah.
Other things I wrote down is that Ravenclaws usually have good general and cultural knowledge. I wrote this down because Ravenclaws are probably good readers or consumers of media.
Yeah.
So that, like, if you ask a Ravenclaw about mostly anything, they'll probably have a response. And I kind of base it off Dad, too. He has approximate knowledge of many things. Even if he just makes it up, he likes to talk about stuff.
Yeah. Dad always has an answer to any question, even if he has no idea what he's talking about. If you ask
him
something,
too, huh?
He'll never just say, I don't know. He'll always have an answer. I love this has become the drag dad cast.
They're witty, sarcastic. They are organized people, even if only they can make sense of the madness. I did put that down. So even if, like, a Ravenclaw has a room that looks like a den, they still know exactly where everything is. That's what I pick as a Ravenclaw. I don't know. You can fight me on that, but...
If someone came into my room, even now, as like, I would be able to tell if someone moved even something a slight inch.
Yeah. Oh, I do that. I know where everything is, even if everything's in a pile.
So two other things I had was that Ravenclaws are tolerant and woke, and that they're likable but shy for the most part.
Ravenclaws sound great. They don't sound basic anymore. You've really fleshed out the house.
Oh, there's more coming. I really... Ravenclaws...
We're complex.
They're complex, and they've got good vibes. Like, they're the least problematic house, I think, in terms of the people they've produced and just, like, the vibes they have. Like, you'd always want to have a friend that's Ravenclaw, I think, to help you with your homework, if nothing else.
That's why the trio got into so many bad situations. They didn't have a Ravenclaw to steady them.
No. Well, they didn't have any problem from any other houses,
they're
really.
They're fucking jocks. Dumbasses.
So getting into that, should we talk about how Ravenclaws are represented in the series, whether it's books or movies? Go ahead, Josh. You give us some details.
Oh, honestly, like, there's actually an interesting point that I read when, like, while researching this as well, was the fact that both Lockhart and Cho Chang use the sort of cliches of their house to get by in terms of friendships and popularity, and they're trying to have this good social status. And I'm like, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So pretty much the best representation for Ravenclaw in the books is Flitwick.
Yeah.
This is my boy. Because, Cho sort of just gets... Once Harry sort of, like, dumps her, gets annoyed with her, she doesn't get mentioned at all.
Yeah,
again.
She pops up in year seven.
She pops up.
Gets sidelined by Ginny.
Terry Boot, Michael Corner are, like, sort of, like, footnotes on Harry's journey to being like, oh, she liked Ginny, I guess.
Something I noticed on, like, the list of Ravenclaws that we had is you can basically split all of the notable Ravenclaws in the series into two categories. The first is love interests. So we have Cho Chang, Padma Patel, Terry Boot, Michael Corner. And then the other category is weirdos.
That's true.
So you have Luna Lovegood, Professor Trelawney, Moaning Myrtle. I would even say Ollivander because he's a weirdo. Rick the Oddball. Is a Ravenclaw.
That's great.
Oh, I do like that.
Hotties and wackos.
I do like the energy of Ollivander just sliding on his big ladder. like, you know that? It's my favorite moment ever in Adventure Time. It's when the deer takes off its hooves and it has little fingers underneath it. It's become a gif now. It's like my favorite thing. I think that represents me and Ravenclaw as well. It's like...
big Ravenclaw energy.
I don't know what you just said, but it made perfect sense to me.
The clip after this episode.
Yeah.
No, I know what it is, but like a deer taking off its hooves and having fingers perfectly represents Ravenclaw. Like, what the fuck are you trying to say? But I get it.
He's an artiste. He's being creative and original. Yeah, I like what you were saying about Cho and Lockhart sort of using the social status of their house. Because I didn't really touch into strong enough, but. Like, Hufflepuffs are known as the dumbasses, Gryffindors are known as the heroic jock types, Slytherins are known as literal Nazis, and then the Ravenclaws are just like, they're the smart guys. If you get sorted into Ravenclaw, you don't really have anything to complain about. Everyone's like, oh, I'd be happy with Ravenclaw. They're the smart ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing wrong with being called smart.
It's like, oh, Ravenclaw, we're good.
Yeah.
We're settled.
Yeah, there's no stress about that.
I don't see Ravenclaw as really having a bad side like all the other houses. Like you said, Hufflepuff's dumb, Gryffindor's annoying, Slytherin's evil. Ravenclaws are like... Art, they're fine. I don't see evil side to Ravenclaw.
Everyone has their dark side.
Yeah.
More of a stereotype. Like, I don't see Ravenclaw as having a bad stereotype. There are bad Ravenclaws, Gildora Lockhart, for example.
Oh, it doesn't really work. I was going to say, like, an example of an evil Ravenclaw would be Megamind, but he goes good by the end. Because he's not a Slytherin. He doesn't have ambition. He's just got schemes, and he's just real smart and creative.
I thought you were going to mention someone in canon, and he's like, Megamind.
Megamind. But yeah, I like how, like, I think a lot of people ignore this. Like, we've talked about this. It's not just academia with Ravenclaws. It's definitely also different kinds of smarts, like, creativity and self-expression and social smarts. And I think that's really well represented by Trelawney. How, like, she's, like, learned in her field, but I never got the idea that she was, like, really academic or focused on hard work and study.
No, that she's a passion.
Yeah,
she's... That's my hot take in terms of what's something about Ravenclaw no one really talks about. It's in terms of, like, having that passion and drive for something that you want to do and achieve. Mm. And, like, that's creative.
Or knowledge-based.
Or, like, research-based. Or, like, it's not being the best in schooling or anything.
Yeah.
It's just about being yourself and in that pursuit of knowledge.
Yeah, that's. I think that's the difference between Slytherins and Ravenclaws. Like, if if Ravenclaws have ambitions, it's about learning more, whether it's creatively, academically, whatever. Whereas when Slytherins have ambitions, it can be applied to anything.
We mentioned, like, I just like learning for the sake of learning. Like, I'll just research and read things all the time. But you would do it mainly for, like, your own studies and your own, like, self-interest in terms of, like, propelling your career forward. Whatever.
Yeah, that's definitely me. Like, I do love learning, but the majority of my learning is focused towards... Yeah. Getting better at what I need to do to be better and do best.
Yeah.
But whereas you, like, you'll watch a movie and you'll read all the trivia for it. Like,
yeah.
All the trivia. Even if you didn't like the movie that much. No. I just want to ask Josh one thing. How do you feel about the fact the movie's made it blue and silver for the house colors?
I hate it.
It
feels like a last minute lazy decision. I blame, even though it's usually the result of several things, I'm going to blame Steve Clovis, because he's to blame for a lot of things, mainly for dumbing down Ron in the movies, and, like, being a Hermione fanatic, and just being overall, in general, just an asshole. But I blame him.
We've dragged him before. Never Steve my name, Clovis. But we've done it.
Steve Clovis.
Yeah, because, like, even though I assume, like, the decision would have become, like, Christopher Columbus, who would have approved the design from the production designers and the art designers, I still been like, why? Like, what's the point of silver? It's just frustrating to look at.
I just think it's...
And all the merch, there's no merch, like, official merch. It's all movie merch. Even at the official Harry Potter world, which I've never been to, but I've been told.
The audacity to choose the colours for the house whose focus is on honesty and attention to detail and change their house colours. And
to do
that
to
the majority of the fans, that is blasphemous.
It is infuriating, especially because, like, you don't need to change it. Why? They all have their own unique colour scheme. Why change it?
What was their intention or, like, reasoning?
Like, if they just randomly changed the Hufflepuff animal to a pig and, like, there's no reason for it. They just did it for no reason.
For having... The colour changes was in terms of balancing out the mood of the Great Hall, in terms of there's the red and then the green and then the blue, but you need to have that backdrop of silver. And then,
it's bullshit. That's
it's all bullshit.
Shut up.
Yeah, quiet you.
I've got some pros and cons about Ravenclaws in general, if you want me to read them out, and you can argue me if you want. Ravenclaw pro, they're smart. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, sorry, I just had to... When you said you can argue me if you want, I was just sitting there in my mind, I was thinking, I don't want to argue, I'm just curious.
Oh, bless.
I'm like, oh shit, here we go.
Shit, here we go again.
For a non-Ravenclaw perspective on that, when you said you can argue if you want, I'm like, okay, time to disagree with literally every single word that comes out
I
of
love
her mouth.
This is great. I knew we could have definitely had house guests, and I'm happy that we chose this. So, Ravenclaw pros, they're smart. Ravenclaw cons, no patience for ignorance.
Oh, no, you know that about me.
Yeah.
I've been like that since I was a child.
A child?
Like, my dad's told me that in terms of, like, he's like, yeah, you haven't, he's like, I don't mind, because it frustrates me too. He's like, you have no patience for anybody.
Yeah.
They're ignorant. I'm like, and I'm being like, a little tiny kid, even when I was small, and I'd be like, yeah.
The only time I've actually seen you angry is when people, like, don't understand something or are being rude or being, like, really close-minded. That's what really pisses you off.
Close-minded and sensitive.
I don't think that's a con. That's a good trait. Pro.
Yeah, I mean, there's intolerant a difference between, ignorance. Like, recognizing ignorance as a problem and then that being, like, you have no patience for it. Because the problem with that is that you can't teach people to not be ignorant.
Yeah.
If you have really no patience for it. It's like, if that's, like, your biggest hamasha, like, I hate that. I can't handle it.
Yeah, like, I always have a go. I always try.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can see.
But I think.
Sometimes I fail. Most of the time I fail because I'm just like, I can't deal with you. Because usually the person's terrible anyway. And I'm like, I don't want you in my life. Get out of here.
Usually the person's terrible.
Ignorant it's fine. Are like, terrible. That's fine because that's when I step in and I try and help them and see why they're wrong and like why they can improve. And like, that's happened in real life before where like I'll be talking about a situation that's happened at work and how I have to like change my course because this person's a bit ignorant and you're just like, I hate them, they seem like a school bully, like I don't trust them, like and that's fair, that's fine, I totally get it. Okay, another pro. They're very open-minded people. A con, very competitive. What do we think about this?
It's not the usual form of competition, no. Like, I'm not, like, I wouldn't say, like, every facet of my life. Like, for me, I don't really, I'm just like,
I don't. Yeah, but I feel like what this, I wrote this down for was, I think it was listed in, like, the Pottermore intro for, like, the Ravenclaw prefect saying, oh, welcome to Ravenclaw House. We're known, so one of the things that she says is, like, we're known for being really academically competitive and willing to, like always trying to beat each other when it comes to our grades.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that's been noted, but I don't know how true it is to, like, Ravenclaw in general.
I reckon that's bullshit.
Yeah.
I think that's more the stereotype of Ravenclaws as the academic nerdy type.
Yeah.
It's more of a Slytherin thing to be really competitive and a Gryffindor thing.
Yeah, there's a Slytherin and Gryffindor traits, like, competitiveness.
There's the idea of being competitive in terms of, like, pushing each other forward. And always being like, hey, if I do this a bit better, like, you can catch up with me. And, like, it's more of a friendly, like, team-building exercise. But in terms of straight competition, like, where it gets rough and humble, it's... No. That's definitely the cliche.
Yeah. I think the cliche belongs to super... I know he's so soft.
He's such a gentle boy.
I think the cliche definitely belongs to, like, super academically-minded, used to getting prizes Ravenclaws. Which I can see that they have that competitive streak, but, like, you know, they're not the majority of the house.
I want more stickers in my grade one workbook.
Those star stickers.
I will say I've kept every single award I've ever gotten for school. It's a big stack.
Big Ravenclaw energy.
Yeah, but I've done that as well. I don't think that's Ravenclaw exclusive.
That's just us as free, smart people in the world. We're just, like, big stack of awards. Time to flex.
I don't want to brag, but I was a pleasure to have in the classroom.
Yeah, I was a pleasure to teach too, and I got a letter sent home.
Oh, reader of the month.
No one's going to hate this. They're like, they're just tooting their own horn. Shut up.
Pro, creative and artsy. Con, burnout.
Dad.
Oh, no.
In what sense? Like,
I don't think burnout as, like, a character, but, like, as something that happens to them a lot, where Ravenclaws, I think, put a lot of pressure on themselves and they don't give themselves breaks. Slytherins will obviously put pressure on themselves, but Slytherins are still, like, treat yourself and, like, give yourself a break.
I get too stressed.
Whereas you get real stressed and I have to intervene and be like, all right, calm down, let's watch a movie and have a break.
Mm.
Whereas you, like, won't stop. Because the Ravenclaws don't have that amount of self-care that Slytherins have, because Slytherins are arrogant and love themselves too much. So,
we deserve nice things.
I have the best theory. I will be the one muggle who can study at Horrible.
Yeah. So yeah, that's why I put down burnout, not necessarily as, like, they become a burnout and they can't succeed in anything, but, like, I think they suffer from it a lot because they don't give themselves enough of a break. What do you think, Rhea?
I think that's true. I keep going back to Dad because, like, that's the only Ravenclaw that I really know very well.
And what about one of your friends from high school?
Oh yeah. This trait doesn't apply to her though.
Pro, witty and original. Con, they're claimers. So something that I read about Ravenclaws is that they like to claim people as Ravenclaws, even if they're not. Anyone that's basically intelligent or shown to be, like, really academically successful, so whether they're, like, the best potion maker or something, they're like, oh yeah, they're Ravenclaw.
I read that too. Considering I haven't really thought about in terms of fiction before, you know, I don't really care.
Yeah, it's hard to say that in real life, but...
Because we both formed a list together and we both sort of workshopped who it would be, and we put a maybe pile, so we were pretty open.
person.
Yeah, but I was pretty open to the fact that, yeah, this is probably accurate. Like, we're, like... Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's more about the stereotypes around Ravenclaw House than it is about... Ravenclaws feeling the need to claim people who aren't Ravenclaws as their own.
Because,
like, I think we're more inclined as human beings to see the traits that we recognize in ourselves in other people. So, like, I can tell when people are Slytherins, but I can't really, like, I don't have a list in my head of other Hufflepuffs and Ravenclaws and Gryffindors because I just don't look for those traits when I'm looking at other people.
I was struggling to find cons for Ravenclaw, so I was trying to put down anything I could find in the research of, like, this could work.
Fair, like, formulate a hard, like, scientific method.
It won't be hard to make cons for the Slytherin episode. I am ready to self-depreciate.
Oh, yeah. Con, Ravenclaws are too perfect and enough. Have no flaws.
I have here pro. Ravenclaws aren't glory seekers. Con, they can be cruel if they don't rein in their jokes. I think Ravenclaws might have a tendency to go too far and be too sarcastic. And at the willingness of, like, trying to look clever and smart, they might, like, really push on people's feelings sometimes.
Yeah. What you just said is, pro, Ravenclaws aren't Gryffindors. Con, Ravenclaws are Slytherins.
Look. Yeah.
I think we've both been in a fort of that before.
Yeah,
I think that's a universal trait in a lot of sense. I mean, not universal, but maybe a trait that features both in Ravenclaw and Slytherin.
Yeah, I think anyone who's got a lot of intelligence and is a sarcastic person has definitely gone too far on several occasions and, like, really hurt someone's feelings before. Like I said, I was reaching. I'm like, oh, I've got to think of something. I had here for pros, they're good storytellers. Cons, they can be condescending because they're smarties and they can come off as, like, I know more. Okay, yeah.
I mean, look, is it condescending when I have to teach a 19-year-old at my work how to read time?
It's big Ravenclaw energy.
Oh my god, is that a real story?
That's a real story.
Mm.
You work with a 19-year-old who can't tell time?
Pretty much. They couldn't tell, like, read an analog clock.
Or military time, right?
No, it was an analog, like, normal, like, 12-hour time. Oh, like, I was like, oh, boy. Yeah, it was pretty much...
like, just a clock. Wow, okay, no wonder you get angry at ignorant people.
Pros, they are great at thinking on their feet and improvising. I think, like, if you asked a Ravenclaw, like, why didn't you... Sorry, I gotta think of a situation where a Ravenclaw might get in trouble.
My dog came out of that.
Never happened before.
Never happened. Tulip Karasu from... Oh, I shouldn't say her surname because I have no idea how it's pronounced. Tulip from Hogwarts Mystery. She's always getting in trouble.
Yeah, give me a scenario.
She put a dung bomb on her toad and it exploded everyone.
Yeah, I can't really think of an example, but I always get the impression that if a Ravenclaw was cornered and someone's like, why did you do this and what happened there? Are you okay?
No, it's just because, like, Rhea provided you with an example, and you're like, I can't really think of an example.
No, I mean, it's just because I can't remember how he...
Thank you, Josh. I was also going to point that out.
I can't remember how she got out of that. I don't remember, like, I have vague memories of this game. What I'm trying to say is, when a Ravenclaw is cornered after doing something wrong, and they're asked to explain themselves, they'll always come up with some sort of, like, quick thinking response which sort of absolves them from the crime. And I can't think of what Tulip said to absolve herself from what she did. And I can't think of an example. The Doctor does it a lot, like on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
He always talks himself out of situations.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I talk about Doctor Who listeners, I'm talking about Christopher Eccleston to David Tennant. Those are the times that I grew up with Doctor Who, so that's when I really know. I haven't seen Jodie Foster yet, I intend to. I do not care about Matt Smith or Peter Capaldi, and you can at me on that. Okay, yeah. And then my last pro is that they're good workers. Cons I have here is that they can be lazy. So this is, like, kind of oxymoronic.
They're good workers, but they're not good workers.
Well, good worker
you're lazy, Parker. You're lazy. You gotta show up to university. I'm Spider-Man.
That's his voice. To clarify, good worker doesn't equal hard worker. You can be a good worker and the fact that you're really smart, but you don't start your essay till 2 days before because you're lazy.
I feel like that's you as well.
That's me as well.
But then HDs still.
HDs get that's degrees also me. And I still get all the HDs. Yes. So good worker because they know how to time manage and they know what they can do with their time and they know what they can do with the effort that they put in. But not necessarily a hard worker because they practice all the time and, like...
That's what Hermione is. She's a hard worker. She's not a good worker.
No.
Because she doesn't know how to, like... I feel like she just cramps too much, stresses out, and then gets real mad.
And she, like, she remembers a lot of facts, but she doesn't necessarily make opinions
about
everything.
She doesn't come up with her own concepts.
No. She's not an original thinker.
She's not...
Also, she has no concept of how to adapt her working habits. So, like, when Harry and Ron need help with studying, she just tries to make them study the way that she studies, and it doesn't work because they don't think like she does.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, overall, I love Ravenclaw. It would be my third option for a house, but it's got a nice aesthetic. I love the star aesthetic. Third option, it would. So it just...
Oh, is it behind Hufflepuff?
It is
behind Hufflepuff. Fine. Fuck Gryffindor.
Fuck Gryffindor? No fucking way. I'm sorry, Gryffindors. You're severely underrepresented in this house.
Also, while we're on the topic, Ravenclaw is my secondary house. So I have a lot of Ravenclaw traits.
Yeah, that's right. I can tell.
I have a lot of... I think I got a lot of Ravenclaw traits too. Like, I'm a creative person. I'm a smart person. I just think that I would rather go on Hufflepuff first. And it's like they're really close to me, like Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw, but I think I'd just go for Hufflepuff first because then I could rule Hufflepuff.
You can rule Hufflepuff.
Well, it is your third house, and as it is your third house, and as we know, third place bronze is basically winning if you just go backwards or whatever the fuck nonsense you said earlier.
It's exactly, thank you.
Yeah.
And my personal motto for life in Ravenclaw as well is fake it till you make it. That's the motto.
That's true. the Ravenclaw motto is like, is there anything better than pussy?
Yes, a really good book.
Is there anything you want to say, Rhea? Because I feel like I've been talking for a long time.
Yeah, you basically covered all of my points in like the first 10 minutes or so of what you were talking. Good sentence make, Rhea.
Okay, go for it.
But I've got one thing that I really want to talk about. Ravenclaw House. Instead of a password, they have a bronze eagle-shaped door knocker that asks the entrants a riddle before permitting entry. That is some grade A bullshit, and I just want to get your opinions on it because sucks for you guys. You have to answer a riddle before you can go to bed.
I love it. Natural selection.
That's true. Yeah. I love the idea of coming back from the big feast after a big holiday and being confronted. But usually, I wouldn't, if I wasn't a prefect, I wouldn't have to answer. I'd be like, yeah, whatever.
I think the prefects still have to answer, though.
No, the rangers have to answer, but we can just follow. We can just hold the door open. Unless it closes after every student, and it's like, you answer a different riddle.
Oh, okay.
It's like, I don't know if that would work, because of crushed.
Oh, so if you weren't a prefect right now, you could just follow in after the prefect.
Yeah,
holding the door.
Yeah.
So you'd always try and, like, step behind someone.
Yeah, like the Gryffindor prefect knows the password at the beginning of the semester and then tells everyone and then they all get inside the first time. That's fine for the first time you have to go to bed with the entire house all at once. But what about every single other time when you have to fucking do, what's a riddle game? I don't know.
You just come from your owls and it's like, answer this riddle and you're like, oh, fuck, I just want a spare quill, fuck off.
I've seen this joke online a lot, but it's like, oh, you come stumbling to the Ravenclaw dormitory after a late night drink session. It's like, what gets wetter and wetter the more it dries? And you're like, your mom, eh? I love it. I love that because I am personally a big fan of riddles, so I wouldn't have any problems at all. And that's just my opinion.
It just trains you. It just trains your brain to always be like, I have to solve riddles as well. Yeah. It's a good like brain teaser.
It sucks if you're like a math geek though. So you're not necessarily like a huge riddle kind of person, but you're like your smarts lie in like math and let's say music. And then you're confronted with this fucking bird that you just want to kill every time you see it. It's like, ooh, what came first, the chicken or the egg? And you're like, fuck.
Oh, you think about it, like, if you're a musician, like, you usually know how to rhyme. Just sort of break down.
I'm betting there's definitely some Ravenclaws that can't get in.
Oh, I'm just trying to give the benefit of the doubt here, whatever.
Like, I'm super smart, like, I'm basically a genius, and I have a brilliant memory, and I'm so great, but I fucking hate riddles, man. I hate them. Yeah, I don't want to solve riddles every time I have to go to bed. I just think your common room is bullshit.
It's so pretty inside, though.
No, it's not bullshit. It's just the entrance.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, it is. The common room itself is gorgeous. Like, it's beautiful. It's the best of all of the houses.
Okay, so I have just three questions, and I've provided answers myself, but I'd like to hear what you guys have to say as well.
Sure.
So what's it like to have a Ravenclaw as a friend? I've said that you have mad convos with them. They're the pop culture friend, so if you're, like, obsessed with a movie franchise or anything, the Ravenclaw friend is probably obsessed with the same franchise. They're the organized mum friend, so they're always the first to arrive to the events and to schedule all the stuff. And they don't have much drama in their lives, but they always know all the dynamics and tea of what's going on in the group, is what I've sort of predicted about a Ravenclaw friend. But what do you guys think?
It's pretty accurate. I speak from experience.
My experience having a Ravenclaw friend from high school, I'm so sorry if you're listening to this, is having someone who, like, does not have their life right at all. Like, their life is a mess, but they're always there that's with true. Advice for you, yeah, for your life, do, sorting yeah. it out. But that's a drag on her. The good thing about having a Ravenclaw friend is she's so deeply passionate about things that I, like, that aren't even on my radar. And it's in a way where she's genuinely always trying to help me and get involved. Like, the time when she did my entire, like, star chart from, like, when I was born to now and predicting my future and, like, telling me all about who the best kind of love interests are for me and all that sort of nonsense. And I'm like, you, yes. what are you talking about? The stars aren't real. This is nonsense.
Yes.
But she worked so hard on it and it was so beautiful. Or when she made me, like, a bunch of mix CDs of a bunch of classical composers that I'd never heard of. And she's like, this is study music to help you study. And I'm like, you're so great. I love you.
Yes, that's big yeah. Ravenclaw energy. Stars and study music. That's it. But definitely, like, having such attention to detail for your friends' needs and, like, always trying to, like, provide nice accents to their life experience is, I think, a good way to describe how Ravenclaws would approach friendship. I've written a lot on this, but yeah. what is it like to have a Ravenclaw as a lover or a partner? So
I'll answer this one.
Yeah, you take it away.
Excellent.
Do you reckon you've ever dated the Ravenclaw real?
100% no. Everyone I've dated has been a dumbass.
I actually had one.
I dated someone who had a tattoo of a camel on their toe, and their nickname was Camel Toe.
Oh, God.
A pure classic.
That's...
And that was not even the worst tattoo. Yeah, so I can't weigh in on this. Somebody who has better lovers, take this one for me.
All right. My experience having a Ravenclaw as a partner, they always remember dates and anniversaries and details with startling accuracy. Mm. Like, I don't remember much about the first night that we met. I remember the big things that happened, but you remember everything about the first night that we met.
Yeah.
I forgot what you look like when I met up with you again, like, after the first night we met. But you remember...
Yeah.
You always remember our date of our anniversary as well. Like, you just always know. They're very accepting of the good and the bad in people. Intellectually stimulating, mad chats all the time. Like, always have good convos, not necessarily just about, like, things we like in terms of movies we like and stuff like that, but also just, like, good concepts, deep philosophical stuff, which is good. Good listeners, attentive to needs, and intricate and aware of patterns. I wrote this down because I was thinking of particularly when you were dividing the pasta. So I cooked like a big thing of pasta and put it into like maybe four different containers of varying sizes. And he was trying to divide it into like two bowls. And he's like, all right, do I take 3/4 of this container and put like maybe 1/8 of this container to make like a bowl? Hey. And I'm like, just use your eyes. Just put the pasta in.
The thing is, the meat to pasta ratio is important. You need to have enough sauce, enough pasta, and enough meatballs.
Every time you're cooking a meal and you're like, how much of like the rice or the pasta do I put in? I'm like, just look with your eyes. And if it's enough, then that's enough.
I love being creative with cooking, but sometimes you need to have the right amount. We have a tiny kitchen.
Yeah. Just lots of little, like, awareness of patterns and details and things like that that you're like, I always pick up on. One thing that you get really disappointed in is if we're playing, like, a game based on wits and your, like, creativity and intelligence isn't being appreciated in the group, you get real self-conscious about it because you feel like you're not smart enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, no. So, yeah, those are the things I've noticed.
Gotta go fast.
The main things I've noticed about dating a Ravenclaw.
I hope our listeners also enjoy listening to just Jem and Josh are actually in love, and it's cute.
No. It is cute, yeah. What's it like to have a Ravenclaw as an enemy, though? Have you ever had an enemy, Rhea, that you think might have been a Ravenclaw?
No, all of my lovers and all of my enemies are stupid because everyone's worse than me and I'm the best.
Okay. I mean, fair. What about you, Josh?
My enemies no longer exist.
It's been taken care of.
It honestly has. I'm not even being a joke here. Also, none of them are Ravenclaws.
Yeah, it was hard for me to think of people in my life that have been really frustrating to me that were, I think, could have been Ravenclaws until I recently had a recent experience with someone that I think was definitely very intelligent, but the worst at the same time. So what I wrote down was Ravenclaw enemies can think that you're dumb and might try to trick you in this regard. They might try to, like, they underestimate your intelligence for whatever reason, whether it's a sexist reason or, like, a condescending reason, or because they just think that they're really smart. And so they'll try and manipulate you into doing something that will create your own downfall. So you've got to be really on your toes around a Ravenclaw enemy. They can be cruelly sarcastic. They backtrack really easily. Like, they'll say something offensive and you call them out on that and they'll be like, no, I was talking about myself and you. Like, they're really, like, that's the quick thinking thing I was trying to get at earlier, but you can look past it and be like, no. Yeah, they're condescending and they will use blackmail.
Right.
Absolutely. Like, that. I think that's the main, like, weapon of a Ravenclaw. They'll try and blackmail you and, like, they won't resort to violence. They're not a jock like a Gryffindor. But they'll try and trick you and deceive you and blackmail you is their sort of main weapons. That's just my opinion.
Though. Oh, caveat. I've never done that.
Yeah, you've never done that because you're a good boy. Yeah. That's your moral alignment, chaotic good.
Yeah, I've never had enemies like that. All my enemies are stupid. I think I get along well with Ravenclaws, and that's why I only have friend experience for Ravenclaws.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Like, this was the first Ravenclaw enemy that I think I've met, and it was literally last week. Like, in 21 years of living, I honestly think that most people. This is like a stereotype that, like, most smart people aren't necessarily evil because they're, like, open-minded and smart, and they usually realize that resorting to pettiness and being evil and mean doesn't get you anywhere.
It's sort of like a thing, like, where most smart people aren't actually evil, but most people who are evil think they're smart.
Yeah.
That's a very good way of putting it.
Okay, if that's all we have to say about Ravenclaws, I wanted to just talk about a list of people that we think, from real life and from popular culture, who could be Ravenclaws. We've made, like, a speculative list.
Yeah.
I've got some as well. I'm curious to see if we've landed on any of the same people.
Bo Burnham, the comedian.
Yes, the one who wrote the Ravenclaw slogan, "Is there anything better than pussy?" Yes, a really good book.
Yes, excellent. Professor Frink from The Simpsons. The Lying Raven.
Professor Frink, you make you laugh.
Make you think. Milo Thatch, the good boy.
From Atlantis.
Mm. Yeah.
The Doctor. In terms
he is a good boy.
Most of the Doctor's representations.
The one Jedi we've had on the list is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Velma from Scooby-Doo, easy choice. John Mulaney, another comedian. Mary Shelley, the Queen of Sci-Fi. my suggestion was Shuri from the MCU / just Marvel Comics in general, Black Panther.
Yeah.
Belle, Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, 100%.
Another one of mine was Matilda.
Yeah.
Yes.
Samuel Tarly from Game of Thrones. Most of, like, pretty much all of the kids from Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of,
like,
them, I'd
all
say.
The, what are the heavy kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just had a thought of, Edna from Incredibles.
Yeah, we had Edna.
Yes.
As well. And then you put Sokka.
I put down Sokka from The Last Airbender. This is debatable. He could be in Gryffindor, but I think he's a Ravenclaw. Like, I don't know why I'm going to die on that hill. But.
And then our definite maybe choice is Uncle Iroh.
Yeah.
I would argue with Uncle Iroh, though.
Slytherin or Ravenclaw?
You could definitely say he's any of the houses, but I'd really argue for, like, Slytherin with big Hufflepuff energy is what I see Iroh as. Like a Slytherin who's choosing to live their life by Hufflepuff values.
Yeah. I think that Frodo Baggins is a Ravenclaw. And y'all
can
fight me on
yes,
this.
We agree to this.
Yeah. Book y'all can fight me on this, but I think he's a Ravenclaw.
Why?
Because he makes a decision about the ring, and that's a brave decision, but I think he made it because he recognized that he was the only one that could really do it without falling apart. I always got the feeling that he was very insightful. He was very emotionally intelligent. He wasn't hugely brave. He wasn't, like, hugely cunning. And he's introduced to us reading. He decides to make the decision at the end to go to, what's the place he goes to at the end?
Oh, he just leaves Middle Earth.
To leave Middle Earth.
There is a name for it, but I can't recall it right now.
I always got the feeling from him that he was very, like, emotionally sensitive and, but he had to have a great sense of steadiness to be able to carry the ring for so long. And, like, yeah, I don't know, I just always got a Ravenclaw vibe from him, but you can challenge me on that, and I'm sure you will.
No, he just needed a helping hand from the Hufflepuff.
Yeah, and of course, Sam, his loyal Sam is a Hufflepuff.
I guess you've convinced me.
So, yeah, 100%.
Oh, obvious.
Mr. Frodo, did you have anyone else on your list that you thought might be Ravenclaws?
Yeah, I've got some more. Mrs. Frizzle from The Magic School Bus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good example.
Sherlock from Sherlock Holmes.
We mentioned him while we were walking the other day and just how much of an asshole he is.
He's one of those Ravenclaw assholes. He's a bad Ravenclaw.
Morpheus from The Matrix.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of mentor roles can be Ravenclaws.
Oh, yeah.
One that you're probably not going to like, Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory.
Another bad Ravenclaw.
Don't even mention Big Bang Theory in my presence.
Don't mention that fucking disgusting.
Yeah. Alice from Alice in Wonderland.
Interesting choice. Interesting. I would have put her as more of a Gryffindor.
No. She doesn't care about glory or bravery. She's just wandering around trying to stop fucking things up.
But she is very brave and stubborn.
She's very curious, though.
Yes, but she's a child. All children are curious.
Yeah. That doesn't mean it's not one of her traits.
I feel like this is an episode of Get Sorted. Listen to Get Sorted, listeners. Anyway.
I've got one more that might be a maybe. This might be my Uncle Iroh of characters. Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec.
He's an even split for me between Gryffindor and Ravenclaw. I can see the Ravenclaw side because he's very steady and he works with his hands. He's really good at that. But he's also
I know more than you.
I know more than you. But he's also very stubborn. He has that angry side. And he's very set in his ways. He's not, like, adaptable, like, I think a lot of Ravenclaws.
But he learns to become adaptable. He does break down.
Mm. Yeah, he does. Especially in the later seasons, once he marries and has children, he becomes much more... Yeah.
More open.
He's also wisdom.
Yeah, interesting.
Like, he's the source of wisdom in that show.
That's true. It's very true.
And individuality, like, he doesn't give a shit what anyone thinks.
All right. Is that everything that we've... talked about Ravenclaws? We've done it.
One final thing.
Oh, yes. Come on.
Ravenclaws are really empathetic.
Yeah.
And have the great ability to empathize with everyone's emotional and physical needs. So that's it.
Okay.
I'm adding.
So they're going for that Hufflepuff vibe.
In a sense, but, like, we're soft and artistic as well.
Protect them. The strong must protect the sweet.
Yeah. Pretty much what I said was like, Hermione Granger doesn't belong.
Get her out of here. She doesn't belong.
Yeah.
Whoever wants to fight me on that can fight me.
No, I get it. Hermione's a Gryffindor with big Ravenclaw energy, but she's not a Ravenclaw.
I've been Jem, and I'm not a Ravenclaw, but I love them very much.
I've been Rhea, and I'm not a Ravenclaw, but I would be if Slytherin wasn't a thing.
And I've been Josh. I'm a Ravenclaw, and that's a big flex for me.
What would you like to plug, Josh?
I also host another podcast with two of my best friends. It's called Mighty Motion Pitch Range. It's all about film and television from an educated perspective. We all have bachelor's degrees, and also we also make films, so we know what we're talking about.
Big flex.
For the most part. Even though we're also dumb at the same time, and it's a good fun.
Ravenclaws.
We're in our second year right now as well, and we started doing more commentary stuff, though we are taking a bit of a break at the moment. We do have an immense backlog of about 76 episodes
That's big Ravenclaw energy.
Also, we are part of a network called That's Not Canon Productions, so there's plenty of other podcasts by great people on there that I'm friends with as well, so you should check that out. And then continue listening to this podcast, because they are my two favorite people in the world. So do it.
We love this boy. All right, that's it.
Kaka.
Thanks for listening to Podcast 9¾. This show is written and edited by Rhea and Jem. You can send us an email at 9¾podcast@gmail.com, find us on Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram at Podcast 9¾, or talk to us separately on Twitter. Rhea is at SmashMouthRhea, and me, Jem, is at Jem_JustJem. Please feel free to send theories or ask us questions and bombard us with so many messages that we go mad and run away to a hut on a rock in the middle of the sea just to avoid them. Our special guest this week was Josh from the Mighty Motion Picture Rangers podcast. Listen to them wherever you listen to great podcasts. Josh's Twitter is @ThatSundanceKD. Our logo art is by Winged Corgi. Find more of her art at wingedcorgi.tumblr.com. This week's intro music was Gilderoy Lockhart by John Williams, and our outro music was Hedwig's Theme by John Williams. You'll hear from us again in 2 weeks' time.